Ooh, welcome to the weekend edition of the Watson Weekly. I'm your host, Rick Watson.
Hey, it's Jessica Laseski. We're back.
You thought you could get rid of us. You can't.
No.
We are back with another great show for you. Let me break it down. First of all, we're going to talk about GLP-1. These drugs are expected, according to a recent report, to boost apparel retail spending. Do we believe it? Second, our friends Nike have changed their innovation leadership again. Mm-hmm. We'll unpack what that means. And finally, Amazon and Google have both released major updates to their shareholder guidance and strategy. Amazon shareholder letter, we're going to break that down. Before we go any further, just let you know, we do have a newsletter. If you aren't subscribed, what are you doing? Go to watsonweekly.com, click on subscribe, get in to follow us.
That's right. Tell your friends. Don't keep it for yourself. It's too good. Too good.
Exactly. Too good to pass up.
All right, Rick. Well, I'm going to unpack this first story for us. Yes, GLP-1s have been on a tear. And what we're hearing is they're expected to boost retail spending by $13 billion. So to catch you up, these GLP weight loss drugs, Wegovy, Ozempic, many others, Mounjaro, are now taken by roughly 1 in 8 adults in the U.S. The pill versions have just hit the market, which is going to make them more accessible than ever. Mm. You know, and some homegirls are microdosing. It's not just for taming diabetes or tackling some of those health issues. Right. You know, it's just all to keep like the weight in check so you can get that summer bod ready. And so about 80% of GLP-1 users are expecting to see some pretty significant size changes. That means they need more new clothing, and the apparel needs this just like a shot in the arm, because the industry is only growing at 0.4% this year. So they'll take what they can get.
Interesting. Like, you're talking about a lot of names I haven't even heard of. And clearly the motivation for this to happen is, I mean, look, there's obviously a changing in the seasons. We're moving into summer. And so a lot of that stuff is on the shelves. It seems like there couldn't be a better time for this to start happening.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so this research came from Bernstein. You know, when you talk about $13 billion in annual apparel spending, those are big numbers. Mm. It's also items that people need. Apparel's always had challenges with inventory turning. A lot of stuff we know ends up in the sale rack, and then it ends up at the off-price retailers, and then it ends up in the landfills. It's like a vicious cycle that goes on and on. That's 700 million new items that we think will be available for purchase. They're utilizing like an $18 ASP. Mm. You know, if the basket's closer to 40 to 50, which we know that's not happening with Shein and TJ Maxx and others, but the revenue opportunity gets pretty large. So yeah, Rick, what do you think about who's going to be the beneficiaries in this apparel spending frenzy?
Yeah, I mean, look, it feels like there is resale could be an interesting market because, you know, buying new when you're changing a bunch of sizes, if that's floating around a little bit, could be a challenge, especially like I need something, but I'm not sure am I going to be this size for a week, a month, 6 months.
Right.
You don't necessarily want to invest in a whole new wardrobe. Resale is a good way to get an entry point in a new look without, you know, breaking the budget.
That's right. And, you know, there's also kind of a nod to some other retailers that could benefit. For sure, off-price, because like you said, you may not want to go blow your budget on a big luxury wardrobe, but you would invest in like TJ Maxx. You might even like try Stitch Fix because you're able to like get some ideas around styles that you hadn't maybe worn or wanted to wear. And of course, like your athletic brands, Nike, Lululemon, Athleta, you know, should have a beneficiary tailwind as well because people are also exercising more. They're going to the gym and they need more athletic clothes. So it'll be interesting to watch this one and see if the hype becomes real.
Yeah, I'm a little bearish on this because people's behavior tends not to change. And they're like, oh, now I can work out less and now I can eat a little bit more. Like, are people going to maintain or are they going to keep this forever? And so that's, is this a structural change or is it just more of a blip that will then sort of normalize and go back to normal?
You know, the macro trends don't lie, Rick. And the other thing that we're seeing happening adjacent to this GLP-1 macro environment shift is people are selling less snacks. Mm. We've got some pressure there. You know, we heard, I think in 2025, even Walmart signaling there was less spend going to some of those areas. So this will be one to watch. And yeah. I'm going to go on the, I'll be the bull
all
here.
Right.
I think that this is going to have a tailwind. Maybe not 13 Bs, but I think we're going to see some couple hundos maybe.
Nice. I like it. If you're anything like the CEOs and ops leaders I talk to, you're tired of the AI hype cycle. You're ready to move past the prototypes and actually use AI in your daily workflow. This is exactly where Avalara is leaning in. They aren't just giving you a chatbot to answer questions. They've built agentic tax and compliance. Here's why that matters. Most AI just assists you like a sidekick. It gives you more homework. Avalara's AI agents actually do the work. We're talking about AI that lives inside your ERP or your Shopify store to automate the entire lifecycle, from tax calculations and cross-border classification to actually filing the returns and resolving jurisdictional notices. It's about moving from data to decisions in seconds. You can query your tax data in natural language and get back expert verified answers, not AI hallucinations. If you want to stop messing around with manual compliance and start scaling, you need to see what they're doing with Avi. Go check out the page they set up just for this show. Get the full breakdown at avalaratax.watsonweekly.com. That's avalaratax.watsonweekly.com. Our next story up is Nike has switched up its innovation leadership again. So obviously, in case you haven't been following the story, Nike stock is down 32% this year. It's like the lowest price in over a decade. The turnaround, which Bright Eyes has not yet turned around.
I think the Bright Eyes got crusty.
CEO Elliott Hill is showing cracks a little bit. They're forecasting revenue cut. He's taking over kind of a yeoman's task. I mean, when your previous CEO literally gives your customers the middle finger by taking product out of the stores and making it harder to buy and not innovating, thinking you're a tech company, all those things. The question I have is shareholder patience. And we talked about this at NRF this year, that the turnaround was not going to be fast enough. And lo and behold,
it ain't. People are losing the patience, including Elliott Hill.
Yes.
There is an innovation problem. There's also, like you said, taking things off the shelf. And we're seeing regions more impacted more so than others. Like if you look at the revenue by region, you've got North America share at 44%, but EMEA's like lost 27%. Greater China is declining. Seven straight quarters of declining sales. It's rough o'clock in Nike land.
And so what they're doing, that they have a new innovation officer coming in, Andy Kane. He's been with the company for a long time. He has been on a number of their big launches over the years. And so the question is, he is essentially, from what I can understand, is a shoe designer at his core. In terms of the bets, this is probably not the worst bet Nike could make, because ultimately, like Mars Blackman used to say, it's the shoes. It's got to be the shoes. And so as we think about that, getting back to basics so that you can then build storytelling on top of that based on the problems that you're solving for the customer, Nike needs a story right now.
Yeah, they sure do. And I tell you, the story is not going to come from some of the things they signaled in Women's Wear Daily in late 2025, like the inflatable Olympic jacket.
Ooh, I like that one.
Neuroscience-based footwear called Nike Mind. Maybe this new cooling fabric, AeroFit, could be interesting. Mm-hmm. And then Project Amplify, which is a powered running shoe that's built with a robotics partner. And I don't know if they're planning to outfit the robots that just did the marathon in China, but you know, where is this going? It doesn't feel like it's boding well to be the comeback story that's going to bring a lot of consumers back to the brand.
Yeah. I mean, I think the big question is it enough? Dick's bought Foot Locker. Obviously, they're a big Nike customer. Now their innovation leadership has turned over three times in 3 years. That's a big move. How many envelopes is this CEO Elliott Hill's first envelope that he's going to open? Does he have two more envelopes to open? What is his runway? I tend to think he has throughout this year and into first part of next year. If Nike has a bad holiday, I think shareholders could be getting extremely impatient.
I agree. And Andy's got a tough job because innovation roadmaps don't happen overnight. So he's got to prove that he can shepherd through at least what's been in the pipeline and make that splash well, coupled with either accelerating innovation or maybe shaping the roadmap to some things that have bigger bets with higher impact. But I mean, this isn't a quick turn, Rick. Right. So I agree. The scorecard on Elliott Hill would go beyond innovation and actually like performance quarter over quarter. And that's where judgment day comes in.
Yeah. I mean, usually it starts with people. If the wrong people were in place, yep, and you're going to have the wrong strategy and everything else is going to fail after that. So here's hoping that Elliott Hill is able to get it turned around and that Nike can return to its former glory.
That's right.
Our next story is, speaking about the infrastructure arms race, what Amazon and Google are actually building. Just to catch you up, there are two big events that happened in the last week. First, Amazon just dropped its 2025 shareholder letter, which Andy Jassy likes to write and talk, I will say that. He actually used a New Zealand indie band lyric to make the case that progress is never a straight line, and that's the point. Obviously, they're betting $200 billion in new infrastructure, mostly in AWS, for on chips and data centers. Google,
love a good analogy.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. Google, in terms of their bets, they're also one of the only other vertically integrated providers, meaning someone that's building their own chips. He gave a candid interview on the Cheeky Pine of all places, which is the Collison's, a Stripe, you know, it's kind of a Stripe sponsored podcast, more or less, and admitted that even with $185 billion CapEx plan for 2026, Google still can't spend as much as it wants, and the company and the world is extremely compute constrained. The bottleneck isn't money, it's actually compute. And so that's kind of the starting point. And I don't know if you had any thoughts about what does this mean for the rest of the ecosystem? How do you think about this? Like, what are your questions, Jess?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, I know you love to nerd out on all this stuff. And sometimes I have to look at, well, what does this actually mean for like the normal people, like regular businesses? What I believe you're saying ultimately is we are going to be just AI token allocation constrained. It's not a CapEx, OpEx investment issue. There's so many businesses that are trying to rely on AI and accelerating their pace of AI adoption in a way to scale. Or, you know, you look at like many companies are talking about layoffs related to AI. And, you know, are they going to be able to probably innovate fast enough or get there fast enough if we've got all of this compute issue and contraction? Is that what we're saying, basically?
Yeah, definitely. There is, I think, a new allocation procedure that, you know, frankly, it will come to the CFO's desk eventually.
Yeah.
And so if you've seen some of the reports on X and places about like Facebook had this sort of token maxing leaderboard where engineers were like bidding themselves to the top of spending the money from their own company into oblivion on AI, it didn't seem like the best idea. I think most CEOs and CFOs are going to have to get their handle around this very quickly. Because if you think about it, a company needs a strategy. A strategy is what? What is it? It's just a way to allocate resources so that you can move forward in the best way. And when we historically have thought about resources, there are two things that are the big constraints. People and OpEx or CapEx, right? Like, and particularly like marketing, like how are you going to spend your marketing dollars?
Yep.
And how many people are you going to have on each team and why? The next thing that Sundar in particular, but really the entire industry is worried about is compute. Meaning, Sundar has said that now he's spending at least an hour a week understanding not just where to put people and dollars from a marketing point of view, he's also spending money thinking about which projects get compute and which projects get starved. And so if you're going to spend $30,000 a year on compute, in addition to the people that are on the project, you need to understand that that's actually being spent the way you thought.
Right.
And so do companies have a framework for thinking about it this way? I think in some ways, Google is sounding an alarm bell for the industry that there is another pillar of your innovation plan that needs to be worked through, because otherwise you're going to have the people, you're going to have your budget to market, but you're not going to have the compute, or it might be spent on the things that you didn't think about.
Sure. Yeah. Or like you said, now this becomes an allocation strategy. You want to make sure your compute allocation is going to your highest impact initiatives. Who's going to govern this?
That's a good question. I don't think in general IT can be trusted to govern it on their own because there aren't good controls for them to say, like, what are they going to like throttle the marketing team or the, you know, the HR team or the development team that is developing new software? Like, how do they control that? There has to be some kind of weekly, monthly review with almost the CFO saying, like, look, this is what we spent last month. This is actually not how we want to spend.
Yeah.
This needs to change. Oh. And in a compute constrained world, when everyone is on Claude and they're like, up, I just hit my limits for till 5 p.m.
Yes,
God, people, you're like cursing at the screen. You're like really wanting to hit that upgrade button, like reflexively, but know that this is not my budget. I need to ask my manager about it. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Does this fit into the corporate priorities? Not enough people are thinking about that right now.
Yeah. Well, and I think you go to another point, which is also how to manage compute, which starts with like enablement and the strategy, because sometimes the compute is driven through misuse or not understanding. And so
token maxing.
I feel like this is a whole new business we could potentially get started. But there was also some more themes that you saw here and you wanted to unpack around like specifically AWS and their strategy. Can you dive into that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, to me, theme two is does AWS have the right strategy? And I think I've been impressed with AWS and how Andy Jassy has thought about this from the beginning, that AI is really a horizontal capability. And obviously it has a lot of these pillars within industries, but that's how AWS itself works. And so there have been a couple of notes that come out recently. In addition to Andy's shareholder letter, OpenAI, there was a leaked internal memo by one of their leaders saying that the demand for OpenAI after the Amazon investment has been quote unquote staggering. And so that is a massive signal to me that AWS is doing something great. That coupled with the fact that Jassy said in the last couple of months that two separate companies have approached him and saying like, look, I know you're spending $200 billion on compute next year. We want all of it. And so I frankly think those players are Anthropic and OpenAI that would immediately buy Amazon's compute. And he can't say that out loud, but it's almost like when UPS always said our biggest customer and they really meant Amazon.
Amazon.
And Andy now says the big hyperscalers that want all of our compute, that's really OpenAI and Anthropic. If Amazon wins that infrastructure layer, the question I have is like, is it really game over for everyone else and they just don't know it yet? Or is there a wedge that OpenAI and Anthropic has in this world, even if they're dependent on Amazon?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I feel like in our system, there's always a multiplayer strategy that has to emerge because people don't love sinking their cash into one player. And even as strong as AWS is, we know they have outages, we know they have challenges. And the minute that it impacts what's happening, whether it's a player like Anthropic or OpenAI or someone else, they're going to have a redundancy plan because all their systems are going to be potentially built around, you know, this AI ecosystem. So they've got to have more reliability. So anyways, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. You mentioned the demand being staggering coming from OpenAI. Got to throw it back to Microsoft. What does that mean for Microsoft's investment? How do you, like, it just feels like the there are wrinkles and fractures in that relationship. Yes or no?
Yeah, I think that's the case. I think Microsoft was caught a little bit flat-footed by Amazon's investment, and OpenAI is trying to thread the needles between these two overlords in the space. And frankly, I think Anthropic is doing this a little bit the same thing by trying to ensure that they have compute on from everyone, from Google, from Microsoft, from NVIDIA, from Amazon, such that if everyone needs them, then that's maybe the safest road to travel, especially in a market where I'm looking at the compute CapEx for all these players. We see Microsoft at or Amazon at $200 billion, Google $180 billion, Microsoft $120 billion, Anthropic $10 billion. You know, they're not a major player. They have the best tools and maybe they have the best model, but they don't yet have the scale of these other players. They don't have a window to the consumer. What they have is the best tools in this enterprise contract. And so I think that's why OpenAI is scared too, frankly, because if Anthropic sort of eats their lunch in corporations, like what is the OpenAI lane?
Yeah, exactly right. And they got to have a story. They got to have a play.
Yeah.
What about data centers? Because data centers, we know there's a huge demand for them. Mm. You see stories all the time that there's not enough space and there's lots of pushback about the square, like basically all the land that is needed and people giving up that land. How does this play into the story with Amazon as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in for a little bit of a mess. I also think it plays into the compute constraint story we went to earlier, because at the end of the day, how do you get out of constraint compute? You have to build more data centers. If it's not on land, it's got to be in space. The only two people on planet Earth talking about space-based data centers right now are Elon Musk and Sundar Pichai. And he talked about that on the Cheeky Pike podcast as well. There's a team within Google. And just keep in mind that like a team within Google 10 years ago started investing in autonomous driving, Waymo. 10 years later, Waymo has a pretty big lead out of any company outside of the Chinese companies. And I would pay attention when Google talks about this. And clearly, Elon is thinking about this very actively. He's appeared on the Chain podcast talking about the same things. So maybe it's a requirement to be on the pod. I'm not sure. You have a pint. I mean, you talk about space. Data, but America in particular, the political environment is lining up against big corporations a little bit and data center expansion. Before it was like, I don't want an Amazon warehouse in my backyard. Now I don't want an Amazon data center in my backyard because now I'm going to have blackouts because, Jess's token maxing. Jess's token maxing is like,
it's my vibe coding on the weekend.
Exactly. It's terrible. Stop it, Jess.
Lots of apps, not enough time.
Right, exactly. So I think it's a problem there. Even if you can get enough data centers built, the reports of how much electricity we have is not enough. OpenAI and NVIDIA are talking about, and Microsoft are investing in nuclear power plants connected to data centers. Even if you can get that, does it connect to the existing grid, which has failed? So you have messes as far as the eye can see. And of course, all of our geniuses in Congress are going to figure this out, I'm sure.
My money definitely goes there. Holly Market bet now. So we know that we've got a compute problem. We know we have the brightest minds, the biggest companies on it. You talk about Anthropic and OpenAI being a little bit scared. Who else is losing out?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone else is really trying to make sure that they have a lane. So Perplexity seems to have been pivoting into sort of computer-based agents. They're not trying to build a mass model, but they're trying to work with any agent across any platform and to make it easier for the consumers to use. Frankly, that strategy still has challenges because Anthropic and OpenAI are trying to do the same thing. And then you have OpenClaw out there also doing something similar. So I think that's a challenge. Ultimately, it seems like the big thing right now is consumers don't necessarily trust purchasing like autonomous agents as much as people thought they would. They're still doing things in traditional ways. However, enterprises have a corporate financial incentive to fire a lot of people, to be blunt. Unfortunately, it's the way it seems to be playing out.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting dynamics. Arms race for sure, but so reliant on the infrastructure, which we know exists, but doesn't get a lot of play. So it was interesting. Really appreciate you unpacking that story. And for sure, it is one to watch heavily.
Yeah, I'm excited about continuing to watch this. A constrained compute, I think, is going to play out in many interesting ways. So.
That's right. You heard it here first.
Exactly. A lot of bold bets to be made. And as you prepare for the weekend, just a reminder, stay classy, be bold, and see you next week.
Have a good one.